So I find it quite funny that we're here in the paddock and Damon wants to go somewhere a bit quieter because he's getting so much attention. But Damon, this is the perils of being a world champion, I'm afraid.
Perils? I suppose it's one of the blessings and one of the joys.
Exactly.
Take it as a blessing. It's very flattering.
And by the way, if you don't get recognised at the British Grand Prix, then you're screwed anywhere else.
Exactly. Yeah, I've been standing out there by the pit straight and there's still thousands of people. They were waiting for Lewis to come out and they saw Lando and they were just cheering and everything. And every time I was there with Jensen, every time we kind of turned around, they gave us a massive cheer. That was an adrenaline-packed Grand Prix. I'm exhausted as much from watching the race as I am from anything else.
Well, I think we need to debrief, everybody. Welcome to the post-British Grand Prix edition of F1 Nation with me, Tom Clarkson.
Me, Natalie Pinkham.
Me, Damon Hill.
As we get racing again, and Sergio Perez isn't far off Lewis Hamilton because he could make a charge in that Red Bull. Hamilton's going to be under pressure as Leclerc leads Sainz, leads Hamilton, leads Perez into Abbey. Oh, and off the track goes Charles Leclerc as Carlos Sainz retakes the lead. Hamilton and Perez are going wheel to wheel. Perez is ahead of Hamilton. Back comes Sainz and Leclerc. Perez goes off the track, cuts the chicane. Off goes Leclerc. Through goes Hamilton. You can hear the roars of the crowd, whatever colour caps they're wearing. Man making his 150th start from pole position. He's going to take victory. And for the first time in Formula One, Carlos Sainz is victorious. He wins the British Grand Prix.
We did it. Yes. We did it. Yes. Vamos.
I can't think of a better Grand Prix.
I'm racking my brains, Tom.
I mean, it was just thrilling, wasn't it?
Where do we start then? Should we just do it in chronological order? I can't think of another way of doing it. I mean, the crash.
Yes, the crash. Now, the crash was upsetting and alarming, wasn't it? It was dramatic. But the thing was, the cameras switched very quickly away to Joe Granu's car. And that really kind of made us feel a bit uncomfortable because
it makes you feel sick, doesn't it? Because you know that if they're not showing it, it's because they don't yet know if he's okay. And so the longer that takes...
And they didn't show any replays or anything like that. And we saw George running across. I'm guessing George got out of his car and ran across to see how he was.
I now understand why he did that. Because he was thinking, where did the car go? I just had a crash with Joe and there's no sign of him because he was hidden behind the barriers. I've never seen that.
I'm laughing now, but this relief, you know...
We're all laughing now because of the relief.
That thing leapt over. It dug in the gravel just before the tyres and then rolled up onto the tyres and over and into a fence. But just to reassure everyone, there is another catch fencing behind that. So I think we would have been okay. But even so, it made it over the blooming tyre barrier, which is quite alarming.
So I just bumped into Graham Loudon, who manages Joe Granu, and he said that when he came out up to the pit wall to talk to the team, reassure them that he was okay, he got this huge cheer from the fans and he couldn't really understand why. And Graham was like, mate, we were genuinely really worried about you. He's like, oh, absolutely fine, don't worry about it. But I suppose when you're in it and you know, it's just the not knowing that's the hard part, isn't it?
The chain reaction of events that led to the accident as well. I'm guessing there's a little bit of overexcitement at the British Grand Prix among the drivers because the atmosphere, the crowd just G's everybody on. Is it a coincidence that you end up with drama at the first corner when the drivers for the previous 2 hours have just had noise and excitement and adrenaline from the crowd?
No, I don't think when they get in the car that they are thinking, this is the British Grand Prix, I'm going to do something really special. I think later in the race, when Lewis was leading, I'm sure he was thinking to himself, I am going to give these people something to remember. And he did, but...
I thought he was going to win it.
Rewind.
There must have been a stage where you really
did. We thought that, didn't we? We just thought, this is going to be the most unbelievable sporting victory ever because of not being even on the radar all season to lead a Grand Prix. And there he was leading. It was incredible. And he looked good. He looked, the pace was good.
Well, as Carlos Sainz said after the race, he was the fastest man on track. And that was proven by the stopwatch as well, wasn't it? He got the fastest lap. But of course, that crash with Joe led to the red flag. And do you know what? With Carlos, he's just had the racing gods with him all weekend, hasn't he? Look at qualifying yesterday.
Well, about time, by the way. He's had a lot of bad luck. It felt like it was the right time for him.
I think the thing is, Tom, when you talk about luck, you can get really lucky and something landed on your lap. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, if you keep knocking on the door, opportunity sometimes comes your way, the door opens. But if you don't knock on the door hard enough, then you're not there when it happens. And he's been there He's been there trying, you know, to do it. Clearly, he wasn't as quick as Charles in the race as well. But then he grabbed the opportunity when the pit stop came. And I don't know whether he got on the radio and said, I'm coming in, or whether they said to him,
apparently it was them.
It was them that said it. But he'd argued the case also to be allowed to race as well. And they were giving him that opportunity. And I think that's fantastic.
Damon, I'm not taking anything away from Carlos. It's just that yesterday in qualifying, it was such a topsy-turvy session. And Max and Leclerc almost sort of took each other out by spinning in those conditions. So they didn't get their best laps in. And then the Joe crash meant that the grid reformed in qualifying order because they hadn't been past the second safety car line. It all just worked perfectly for Carlos. And once he got away at that second start, he was off.
And I guess the big question now is, looking forward, is this the turning point for his career at Ferrari? You know, it's been a long time coming, and got the pole, he's got the win. He feels much more comfortable in the car. You saw that really in Monaco and in Canada. And now it feels like, you know, he could really capitalise on this, and his trajectory is a positive upward
one. I definitely felt that the team is still backing him.
Well, we've moved up to Red Bull and delighted to be joined now by Checo's dad, Antonio. And I mean, what a race from your boy. I mean, when he tumbled down the order after the contact with Leclerc, we thought, well, that's the race over. And then to come back to be on the podium, his best result, his first podium at Silverstone. I mean, you must all be hugely proud.
He's a good surprise for me and for Checo. Checo no have idea with me stayed here. I stayed in the grandstand racing green. Incredible. But do you imagine in the grandstand, only one Mexican push the support and millions of British people in the grandstand? He said, what's happened? But not have an idea the father of Checo, me, you know, in the grandstand. Silverstone, I think so, is in Spanish the cathedral of the racing cars, no? It's the most important circuit for men. This is a track. This is good racing. This is full racing. It's incredible. I love it, Silverstone. And for Checo, he lived many years ago, very close here in Oxford. Now he working very many times with the factories of the team, with Racing Point, with McLaren. No, and is I think Silverstone is your second home from Checo in
and for
in
the
Europe.
First time in his career, he's got a car that he's competitive at every race. He's second in the world championship, just behind his teammate. He can go for the championship. How is this all going down in Mexico?
No, in Mexico and Latin America. Checo is only the one Latin American driver now. And many people in Argentina. Checo in Mexico, he's very popular. But the Miami race is very different. The people from Brazil, from Venezuela, from Peru, from Argentina. Everybody's excited with the Mexican. It's your people, it's Latin America. I think so now is very, very popular. It's more Checo now in the world. This is very important. The support of you, the TV, the good comments of the people with good experience, like a champion. He support to Checo many, many, many times when Checo not driving in Red Bull, I remember.
Damon, you have always said, and you know what we've said on this podcast? He said, I've always said.
And it's great to see him in a competitive car, like you were saying, and being able to show what he can do when he gets an opportunity to be at the front. And I was just thinking also, we used to be Brazilian drivers that came. Are we going to see a flood of Mexican drivers coming across here and following in his footsteps, do you think?
I think now is like the support. Now in Mexico, the economy is no good one, but I think so. The kids, he's coming, many drivers. Antonio, my other son, he pushed many kids in different series now for driving and go-karts and other categories for push to the next Checo Perez. It's very important when Checo arrived to the Formula One, in 30 years, no have a driver in Mexico Formula One.
He's incredible. Wonderful. You should be very proud.
Yes,
you've done a great job with that
excited.
Boy.
No, but everybody's excited. Mexico is your home.
But Now we're in the pit lane outside the Ferrari garage, and just look at that. What a trophy that is. Resplendent in the evening sunshine, and your name, Damon Hill, is already on it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I remember sitting outside Frank Williams's motorhome as the sun is going down, just like it is now, on a beautiful afternoon, having won the British Grand Prix, and signing autographs and just reflecting on what a great day it was. But I have to say, it was an exciting race that I won, but it wasn't quite as exciting as this one.
What a beautiful segue, because Carlos Sainz, the man who was holding that trophy on the podium just a little bit earlier, is walking towards us.
Carlos, absolutely fantastic. It's been a long time coming, but you've got to really make the most of this moment. A huge moment in your career.
Yeah, I'm about to jump on a flight with the whole team. That's why I'm a bit pressed on time. But it's amazing. It's a really, really, really good feeling. Especially just seeing how much the paddock, like, is happy for me. It's,
everyone is buzzing for you.
It's something I...
Has that surprised you?
Yeah. I mean, I know I get on well with people, but I didn't know that people wish me so much good, you know. And this, as a human being, this is something really, really special, you know. And I'm an athlete, I'm a professional, but also a human, and this is super nice to see.
Well, fantastic. Very well done from all of us. Well done, Carlos. Mattia Binotto, thanks for joining us. We've just caught up with Carlos. What a huge moment for him and for the team.
Yeah, very happy, very pleased. 150 Grand Prix to wait for it. I said, now you should not wait for us at 150 before the next pole and the next win. So, not very pleased, because I think he deserved it. Good weekend, pole yesterday, win today. And his hard work, he was really working hard to have his very first victory, and finally he got it.
Matteo, this podcast goes all over the world, just like Ferrari. Ferrari has fans everywhere. When you win a race, what is the response? When you go back to the factory, would you have just like, are you going to Italy next? Are you going back to Italy? I heard that Carlos is going back there. So do you have a factory celebration? What happens there?
Not really, because in a week time we've got Austria. So we've got only 3 days to prepare Austria. But it's certainly a big boost. So what we are doing is to put another flag, the third flag, at the entrance of the factory, which for us is important. But then I think people are really head down to prepare the next one, because we know that the challenge is already coming. But certainly it's a big boost, and it was important after so many races not winning to be back at the victory.
When we spoke to Carlos, he said he was actually surprised at the response, how many people were so happy for him. It's no surprise to us. He's a hugely popular guy. The big question is this the first of many? Will this be a catalyst now for him to really push forward?
I hope so. I hope so, because I think he's a fantastic driver, he's strong. Certainly will give him further more confidence. And to have two drivers that can win, for us, it's the best we can have. So
I was just saying, that's the key point here, isn't it? Now you've got both drivers who can win races, and that's a huge benefit in your armory, isn't it, when you're coming to fight Red Bull?
I think when one driver cannot win, is the other's winning, that's the best you can have. So because somehow you are always improve your probability for the win. So it's important. I know that employing Carlos, he was a stronger racer, scoring a lot of points, as is what he's proving to be capable of.
Really quick question on Charles. He was obviously frustrated at moments in the race. How difficult is that for you as the team boss to manage?
I certainly is disappointed, as we are, because he was comfortably leading the race. Without the safety car, he would have certainly won. And it would have been important for him, knowing that Max as well got problems and troubles today. So it's frustrating, but it's the way it is. And I think he did a fantastic race. Very big fight at the start of the race with Checo. But then later on as well, after the safety car, he tried to protect and to defend the position as hard as he could. And I think the way he was driving was really amazing. So he's a good kid. He's a fantastic driver. He will have new opportunities in the future.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
Congratulations.
We're going to have a very quick word with Carlos's physio, Rupert. I mean, what a massive day for you guys. Team Carlos.
Incredible, incredible. I worked with him for 6-7 years, and he's a great guy, obviously very talented, works super hard, and to see it come together like that is fantastic. I'm really pleased.
It's a long time coming, isn't it?
It's a long time coming. I mean, I'm not going to hold that against him.
I'm not going to
remind him of that. But
do you ever get to a point where you're like, is it ever going to come? And now it feels that hopefully there'll be plenty more. You've broken the duck now.
I think, yeah, definitely, like you said, it's... I think for him at the moment, this point in the season, it's a bit of a monkey off his back, just that bit of confidence. And I think it really helped now. I think he can push on. He's got that off his back, and hopefully there'll be more to come.
You're talking about as if it was out of the blue, and I think it wasn't out of the blue. I think it's been coming for a while. I think he's been in the hunt and in the frame, and he's got the desire. There's no doubt about that. I mean, Charles is a really fast driver, and he's got the jump on Carlos. But I think I think confidence is a huge thing in our sport, and some drivers suddenly find it's another level. And I hope this win will do it for Carlos.
That's a really interesting point, actually. What role do you play in keeping his morale high? You know, when he has had disappointments, had a lot of bad luck lately as well. I mean, you're kind of a mentor, a therapist, on top of everything, a best friend. You know, you have to do a lot for him as we travel around the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just myself. It's obviously his dad. He's probably more the mentoring role, obviously, with his motor racing background and being a racing driver. I guess I'm probably more of a soundboard, to be honest. Like, I never go in too heavy or too strong with any kind of line of questioning or that sort of stuff. So I'm really there as a soundboard and there to support him. And when the time is right, you can challenge him, you can ask him the right questions. But ultimately, you know, he's got the talent, he's got the desire, and it's just there to sort of help him along, really.
You deserve this victory as well. Congratulations.
Is he allowed to have a few beers tonight when there's a Grand Prix next weekend? Are you going to allow him that?
100%. I mean, from my side, definitely. I mean, he's...
I know you will.
I will, yeah. His sponsor's Astraea Galicia, so a beer company. So, yeah, definitely he should have a couple of those.
Cheers, Rui. Well done. Fantastic. Fantastic. Jesus Balsero from Diaria AS in Spain. How big is this victory going to be at home? How much have you been asked to write?
It's huge. I mean, it's 9 years, almost 10 years since the last one. For some like us, maybe a bit younger, it looked like this may never happen again. And suddenly we have a guy at Ferrari capable of winning races, capable of doing a pole like yesterday, capable of fighting for something more than we expected in the last years.
Jesus, is this front page news in Spain?
Sure. Not only the sports media, also the generalized media, like the serious newspapers, because this is one of the biggest achievements for Spain in sport.
Who is the biggest Formula One star in Spain at the minute? Is it Carlos Sainz? Is it Fernando Alonso?
Fernando is a two times world champion. He's a legend of the sports for us, because in a way he invented the sport for us. We were not that much into Formula One until he came, but Carlos is kind of raising his level and getting closer to that situation. I think in a few years, if we see these kind of things more often, it will happen.
Fantastic. Great news. Thank you. Thanks for coming on the show.
I'm going to try an experiment now, Tom, because I'm going to just show you how loved the champ is. Because I'm going to take you up to the side of the pit wall now, where there is a sea of fans still here. And I'm going to see if we can get them chanting.
And that is just for you, Natalie.
No. Can we get a chant for Damon? Can we get a chant on the podcast?
Brilliant. Absolutely perfect. Yeah, and I take them everywhere with me. That's absolutely... everyone should have a crowd of people chanting your name.
Well, we should say there have been more than 400,000 people here this weekend. 142,000 today, was it? The biggest ever race day crowd at Silverstone?
Well, I mean, and also it goes on for, four days? I mean, the Indy 500, I think, is just a one-off race. Big crowd. But this is unbelievable. This is the biggest Grand Prix I think I've ever been to at Silverstone.
One of the most thrilling parts of the race for me was that huge flurry of activity at the end where you saw Alonso in the mix. I mean, he thought he might get a podium today. Norris was up there. And then you saw Schumacher, who was obviously going for his first ever points in Formula One, trying to take on Verstappen. You're like, don't do it. Just play it safe. Bag the points.
Absolutely brilliant, wasn't it? It was after the safety car, basically... We had my mind is anyway set on kind of who was going to win this race from the front. And you took your eye off the ball because there was Sergio as well lurking and then Fernando Alonso lurking as well. So there was some really, really incredibly close racing. And I think that it showed these cars can get really close in the high downforce corners because they were very close for a long time. And it just set up the most thrilling finish.
And in the press conference after the race, both Hamilton, I mean, Carlos Sainz had checked out, hasn't he? He'd gone at the front, but both Perez and Hamilton, who had a great dice with Charles Leclerc and each other, said it reminded them of their karting days.
You could see
they were still so pumped by the racing.
Yeah, I could totally get that. I mean, it was literally, there were guys who have been karting against each other in their careers. I mean, Lewis is actually a bit out of their group now, isn't he? Because a lot of them are so much younger. But, I mean, he knows what karting is all about. I mean, but you're karting with almost 1,000 horsepower cars and, going much, much faster.
What I thought was significant as well was it was all respectful. I mean, particularly Hamilton and Leclerc, through cops, through all the quick stuff, they were arguing over the same bit of asphalt, but not once did they touch.
Well, no, there was a little bit of touching, I thought, a little bit of shoving, leaning on people. But I think that the race directors, when they had a protest, it seemed to be very quickly dealt with. And basically they said, no, we're not going to do anything. That's fair racing. I think that was a good sign.
Well, and Danny Sullivan, who was the driver coach this weekend, is very much of that ilk. He believes they should just let them race. And I don't think there was anything underhand in anything that we saw.
No, there wasn't. I mean, I think it was what happens when you race. You know, what is what happens when you've got a guy diving down the inside and, you can't make room for everyone. Sometimes you use all the road, and we saw Lewis going off at turn three and being, you could say, okay, well, he was pushed off by Sergio. But no, really, Sergio dove down the inside and Lewis had to give up track position. And it was brilliant watching some very, very exciting racing. And I thought it was hard but fair. What about Charles and Lewis going around cops? That was so unbelievable.
I mean, it was brave, it was balletic, it was beautiful to watch. I mean, it really was thrilling. And the precision with which they drove and the respect that they earned from the crowd. I mean, the roar was deafening and I just had it through an earpiece.
And proof that the 2022 regs are working. That's crucial.
Yeah, I think definitely on a circuit like this, it's shown that, we have had some processional races where people couldn't get close enough in the fast corners to be able to get the DRS to work. But this time, they were able to do that. They were able to get their car followed through the Beckett section and then get close enough to have a run down to Stowe. So that was good.
How about Alonso?
Fernando Alonso was magnificent in quali yesterday, almost as good as he was in Canada. And then today in the race was just pushing so very hard. I asked him afterwards whether the car was genuinely as competitive or whether it was just a case of him being able to pick up the pieces if other people made mistakes. And he felt probably more of the latter. But he's there. He's in the mix, isn't he? He's able to, be opportunistic.
And he's edging ever closer. Alpine have bought more upgrades. What's significant about that team is all the upgrades they're bringing are working. They're making strides every time they bring a new part to that car. I think Alonso, particularly Alonso, I feel he's the gap between him and Ocon is becoming not significant, but it's becoming a permanent gap, I would say.
Yeah, but hang on. Ocon's still ahead of him in the
Sure, because of the early run. Do you remember the first?
But, I think Ocon's had a bit of bad luck as well today. Like, he had that fuel pump issue, but he could have been on for a sixth place finish.
Very, very good in the races. But something Otmar Szafnauer said after Montreal to us on the show was that where Alonso is different is he's able to find the grip immediately. So when you get a qualifying session, as we had in Montreal, as we had here at Silverstone, which is wet, he just makes the difference.
And he's got incredible racecraft. He's got incredible awareness of what's going on strategically in the race as well. The other thing is this battle between Alpine and what used to be Renault as well, and McLaren. You can't keep them apart, can you? It's like a pub brawl.
Well, and McLaren, Lando Norris, having a tremendous qualifying yesterday.
But Alonso did him in the pits. He lost a place to him in the pits. So that was pretty crucial, wasn't it?
But again, it shows what a great racing team Alpine are at the minute. Yeah. They really seem to be getting the maximum out of it. And Norris has had a good weekend. I feel McLaren have had a good weekend. Him coming home in sixth place.
When you say Norris has had a good weekend, Lando's had a great weekend, definitely. Where is Danny Ric? What happened to Danny Ric this weekend? He went completely off the radar.
He says he's still looking for answers. I mean, there was a lot of head scratching in the pen. He said, I haven't got the answers. He did well to keep out of that melee at the start. He nearly, actually didn't realise just how close he was to getting shunted by Albon at the start. And by the way, we should just say on that that Albon has had to go to hospital for precautionary checks. We're hearing that he's okay, but may have a bit of concussion. And, you know, we wish him well. I mean, I don't think you'll find a nicer guy in the paddock than Alex Albon. It was a shame, really, for Williams, because Latifi did so well in quali yesterday. We didn't get to see how well the upgrades were potentially working on that car because Alex was out at the first turn.
Well, they didn't do very well, did they? Because the truth is that Nicholas Latifi qualified through, got through to the Q3 and, you know...
And didn't have any.
Yeah.
No, I know, but we didn't see that the true potential of them because Alex had an issue in quali and then was out straight away in the race.
A quick shout out to Latifi. Not only did he qualify 10th, but he stayed in the points for quite a significant part of that
and then just dropped down to 12th, didn't he, ultimately?
Norris, back to McLaren.
Yes.
Really good for him. You say Daniel's still looking for answers, but I kind of feel he's been looking for answers all season. Is that really unfair?
Well, the last 18 months. I don't think it is unfair. I think by his own admission, yeah, there's a lot of questions that need answers and he hasn't got them yet. He went out on the hards, couldn't kind of get heat into the hards, came in and put softs on because he had a DRS issue. His DRS was jammed open, so he came in and swapped to softs, but, you know, didn't benefit from that.
Another person searching for answers in a way is going to be Max Verstappen, isn't it? So...
Well, I don't know. I think he had a bad luck this weekend. You know, I think he had the yellow flag in quali. He could have put it on pole. He thinks he would have done had it not been for Leclerc's incident, which brought out the yellow. And then in the race, you know, he hit some carbon, ironically, probably from his teammate's car when he had the contact with Leclerc. And then it damaged the floor and with that lost a huge amount of downforce. I mean, it's one thing to say, don't worry, Max, carry on driving. It's not critical. Well, you know... It might not be critical.
How do they know
but
that,
you're
by
limping
the way?
Round and with no performance. I think he would probably say that was quite critical.
Yeah, well, we said the thing is, from the championship point of view, I mean, yes, he was unlucky this weekend, but we needed, for the championship, for Ferrari to have a big points haul, and they've done it. Maybe the points should have gone to Charles Leclerc, but they didn't. They went to Carlos Sainz, and Ferrari allowed them to race, and it was a great race, and it's actually swung a little bit back and you know, Max is going to have to do a bit more work. So that's good because luck is the random thing, isn't it, that makes racing exciting as well. It's not, you know, I don't want to not see Max do as well as he possibly can. But, you know, at the same time, you don't want everything to be decided halfway through the season.
It also proves just how critical the flaws are in terms of performance this year, because Charles Leclerc can drive without a front wing end plate for the whole Grand Prix and actually be lapping faster than his teammate. And yet Max Verstappen damages his floor in an incident that none of us actually really saw. And there was nothing from the outside that we could see was damaged. And the car was nowhere. So I guess the debrief at Red Bull is going to be going on for quite some time as he searches for those answers. Now look, Schumacher, I was so thrilled for him to come home in P8, and he was still pushing so hard at the end, wasn't he?
Yeah, he really was. It was brilliant to see, although probably quite nerve-wracking for Gunther Steiner, thinking, just don't have contact with Verstappen, for goodness sake, you know, just bring the points home. And but he was beaming in the pen. I mean, this again, talk about getting monkeys off backs. Sainz has done it with that win, but so has Schumacher. I think that will be a huge relief to him and hopefully open the floodgates for many more.
Yeah, and it also showed their little battle, as in Verstappen and Schumacher, just how hard Max is prepared to fight for a seventh place. He knows at the end of the season those extra points
could all count. Yeah. And actually, that was another thing I asked him in the pen, was that, you know, with the damage and with that lack of performance, actually, damage limitation, all things considered, seventh place isn't bad.
Yeah.
You know, at least he didn't tumble out of the points altogether.
And what about Vettel this weekend?
Yeah, so we saw Seb driving Nigel Mansell's car. Well, it wasn't Nigel Mansell's car, it was his car because he'd bought it. So it's actually his car that Nigel won the championship in.
I so love that.
It was great to hear. It was a familiar sound. I mean, imagine, I did 90% of the testing in that car. So that was the sound of my life when it was going around that Renault V10.
He got straight on it, wasn't he? He was pushing that thing from...
He's probably been taking it for secret laps.
Well, he's a current Formula One driver, so he's actually probably quite capable of pushing that car quite
no,
well.
But he didn't look after it. I thought he might just wave to the crowd on every lap that he did. But the first two laps he did, he was on it. Focused, not waving to anyone.
Well, he was going round Stowe one-handed waving to them.
That was later on.
Well, anyway, listen, he put it on... it was on synthetic... Was it either on synthetic fuel or on green fuel and of some sort, so non-fossil, I think it's the right way to put it. But in the race, talking about green, the green wasn't going too well, was it?
It wasn't in Crawley, but good to get in the points.
He did a very odd strategy. He went short on the first run, didn't he? He only did five laps on the softs.
Well, remember, he actually was one of the trigger points of the crash on the first one. He rammed the back of Alex Albon, didn't he?
I beg your pardon, that's of course he did. But then he went very, very long and then had to do a late pit stop and that put him back a bit. But I expected more from the Aston Martins here.
Well, this year, yes. Yeah. But this weekend, I mean, that's a huge turnaround from quali yesterday. I thought that the safety car had benefited him. And he said, I don't know. I don't think so. I think I could have been seventh if it wasn't for the safety car. I mean, so what do I know?
From 18th on the grid.
Tonight.
Yeah. And, you know, a guy who's had so much success, he's still pushing really hard every lap. And it's great to see.
It's the ultimate pace, isn't it? It's the qualifying. Yeah. And that's what's missing. But
I think it proves that he's still loving what he does. And, of course, he doesn't have a contract for next year yet. And I think everything's pointing towards Seb coming back for more.
I think you're right. And earlier in the year, I wouldn't have agreed with you. I feel like he's got his mojo back. Something's changed. Maybe the car has got more potential and he can see the promise that's hopefully will materialise in terms of regular points finishes. But, yeah, I think he'll leave here happier than when he arrived.
Look, finally, we've got Kevin Magnussen in 10th place, double points finish for Haas. They've had a bit of a rough time of recent races.
Yeah, and so again, quali was massively disappointing for both of them. And so to finish double points finish was fantastic.
And it's proof, isn't it, that you know they're not bringing upgrades to their car. If you just maximise what you have in this new formula of Formula One, the midfield is so close that you can score points. You don't need to keep bringing upgrades and spending lots of money if you're just good at maximising what you have. And Aston Martin are struggling to maximise what they have, whereas Haas today most certainly did.
The question is whether they can make quantum leaps. You know, if they get the money, they can't spend it. So, I mean, the teams without a full budget, they've got a bit of space, but if they haven't finished right at the front last year, then they've got a little bit more leeway, but they still need the money to do it and the time. And the time is actually the big problem. It's not the money, it's the time.
Do you know why I'm laughing? So I just looked over there and Antonio, Sergio's dad, was just hugging him, kissing one cheek and slapping the other. Brilliant.
He's now pointing at us. Look,
I know.
Look at the smile on Checo's face.
It was like Checo was a little boy all over again, and his dad was bring him in for a big hug.
Do you know what, though? That just sums up the view that we're just describing, Pink, sums up, I think, the feeling of everybody after that British Grand Prix. It was just a sensational weekend, wonderful atmosphere, and just what a Grand Prix.
It was one of those epic races that we will be talking about probably 20 years from now.
Whenever I leave Silverstone, I feel somewhat elated and deflated at the same time. Deflated because I know I've got to wait another year to come back. But this is where my heart is. This is where I grew up. These are the races I came to as a kid. We used to live about 20 minutes away. And this race just delivered on every single level. There was that human element where everyone was genuinely concerned about Joe and about Alex. The relief to hear that they're both okay. And then the great racing that we saw afterwards. And the crowd, my goodness, the crowd. Makes me emotional just thinking about them.
So just to remind you all, here are the final finishing positions of the 2022 British Grand Prix. Carlos Sainz coming home in first place to take that maiden win in Formula One. Hot on the heels behind him, Sergio Perez taking the 21st podium of his career, with Lewis Hamilton taking his 13th podium here at Silverstone, the last man on the podium. And then Charles Leclerc coming home fourth, Fernando Alonso fifth, Lando Norris sixth, Max Verstappen seventh, Mick Schumacher getting those first points in eighth, Sebastian Vettel climbing from 18th on the grid to ninth, and Kevin Magnussen rounding out the points in 10th place. Thanks for listening. We'll be back on Tuesday, the 12th of July, to debrief the Austrian Grand Prix. But for now, F1 Nation is produced by F1 and Audio Boom Studios.
Goodbye, F1 Nation. Goodbye, Tom. Goodbye, Damon. See you next week in Austria.
Hey, looking forward to that.